Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody on the call, on the Awaken call. My name is Bela, and I will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken call. Welcome and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. And we do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. And today, our special guest speaker is none other than Germán Herrera, and someone who really embodies today's theme of self-knowledge and transformation through art. Here's how the call works. In just a few minutes, our moderator, Anne Bay, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker, Herman. And by the top of the hour, we'll roll into a Q&A and circle of sharing. And since we have the pleasure of a remarkable moderator who is an artist herself, Anne, I thought we could start by asking Anne to kick off our circle.
Thank you, Bela. It's so sweet. And I feel so blessed to be on the call this morning with you and Herman. And in our beautiful community, we've been so blessed with special souls who pursue their spiritual calling and life path in many, many different ways. And Herman is one such being who is using the medium of art and photography and really embodying. His art is so much more than photography. It's sound. It's incorporating or including all the senses and sensibilities. And he draws from that to answer the fundamental question of human existence: who am I? So in this call, we hope to gain insight into Herman's journey and really step away with wisdom that we can integrate into our own lives. I also want to share that today is a really, really special day. It's Herman's birthday, and he is gifting us with his beautiful presence on the day his mother brought him into the world, and it just feels so, so fitting that we are having this conversation today. So I just want to extend my gratitude for Herman to really share so deeply with us and gift us this time and space with him. For those
thank,
who may not
thank
have...
You for... Sorry, Anne. Thank you for sharing that with all of us. I would love to wish Herman happy birthday with everybody else, maybe later in the conversation, but thank you for bringing that up because I'm sure Herman probably wouldn't have.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, for the sake of clarity, my birthday was actually yesterday, but what I was mentioning, and that today is my first day of this new year, but it's equally important to me.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. Thank you, Herman. So what I wanted to share also is, I hope that everyone had a chance to read Herman's bio that was prepared because it was so, so beautiful. But just wanted to just kind of share that he is the first of five siblings in a family of psychologists. And Herman inherited his love for photography from his maternal grandfather and an interest in music from his father and maternal grandmother. In 1978, he traveled to California from his homeland of Mexico to study photography. But he left art school after 2 years. Traveling back to his homeland to pursue Afro-Cuban drumming. This was in 1980. And for the next decade, Herman did not practice art in the sense of, practical, in the sense of making art. This period of quiet, a space of deep listening and hibernation, so to speak, is essential before a new body of work emerges. And as an artist, this is not a conscious choice, but a deep listening and one that Herman deeply honors. And he refers to himself as really essentially being self-taught. Mm. And Herman and I met 7 or 8 years ago, actually, in an art gallery. And he happened to come into the gallery to show the owner a portfolio of his work, and I was just happened to be there working on a project. And so the owner of the gallery is a friend of mine, said, "Oh, Anne, please join us. I'd love for you to see Herman's work too." But I remember so distinctly that moment when he came in and opened his portfolio, being so moved by his presence. And I remember thinking, oh, I would love to collaborate with him. I was so deeply moved. And when he started to share the images in his portfolio, I was in that space of, wow, I was so deeply touched. It was very, very hard to articulate what I was feeling, which is, for me, just a really special experience. But it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years later that we reconnected and deepened our friendship. And unlike our first meeting, the timing was right, and Herman and I had this beautiful opportunity to really spend time together and get to know each other, and just our paths crossed in a way that it was just, I just trust these opportunities. And we've had many, many conversations that eventually led to service space. And I was excited to introduce Herman to Richard Whitaker, who is also a beautiful photographer. And he was so moved by Herman's work, he featured a portfolio of his images in a Works and Conversations issue. And at that time, Richard also encouraged Herman to attend a Wednesday. And he is now very much a regular. And as you all know, he's a real integral part of the service-based community, always gifting in so many very quiet ways. He's added these beautiful, you know, gifted artful sounds to the Awaken calls, and anything he touches is just, you know, adding beauty. So anyway, I wanted to just thank you, Herman, again for this opportunity. And, you know, I feel really moved this morning to just share something that happened between us in the last, you know, the last 2 days while we were kind of having conversations and preparing for our call today. I was texting Herman. We were kind of having this little texting back and forth about scheduling a time when we could just, you know, just speak and in preparation for the call. And so I texted him, and then he texted me back this image of this incredibly gorgeous deer. I mean, it was like this male deer with this really large rack of antlers, and he had this just profound, beautiful look, really a serenity in his eyes, but very powerful. And I texted back, wow. Like, and I had no idea, like, did Herman take this photograph in Mexico, or like, where did this come from? How did this arrive? And then he texted, no, you know, he just arrived, like now. And so I wrote back, powerful animal medicine, like powerful medicine. And then later when we spoke that evening, I shared with Herman, I said, I was so moved by that you shared that image. And he said, oh, in the space of your text, I was going to go on an errand and walk out the door, and there he was. I mean, he was just there. And these opportunities, these moments are really gifts. And with Herman, I feel like he was so beautiful to share that. And as I walked, you know, as I shared my experience with him, it just got deeper and deeper. So I shared with him that evening the power of the deer medicine, which really symbolizes gentleness and innocence and a return to the wilderness. And in this beautiful book I have called Animal Speak, it talks about how antlers are symbols of antennae and their connections to higher forms of attunement. So deer with antlers can be a signal to pay attention to your inner thoughts and perceptions, and to trust them that they are probably more accurate than you think, and that the antlers actually grow behind the eyes. So they're, again, hinting at the symbolism of heightened perception. So it was just so beautiful to share this, and Herman was, you know, receiving that and saying, wow, this is really a profound time, Anne. And so I just, you know, that's the essence of Herman, is that when you step into this presence with him, whether it's on the phone or in a text or in person, you enter a space that is really sacred, and he meets you at such a deep place of listening. And it's very rare for that to happen as a human being, and I just want to honor that so much with you, Herman.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And that's an amazing introduction and very sensitive and touching. And I want to take advantage and also thank Bella for being present here and to service space for hosting these calls that I feel that are incredible windows into wise and inspiring people of our times. And I feel very, very honored to be one of those guests today.
Well, I wonder, Herman, if, you know, something that, you know, being an artist and coming from Mexico, I really would love to ask you, like, what does home mean to you?
Home. Well, I have to backtrack a little bit and without going too far, you know, too long. But the last show that I did, which was last December, was entitled Home. And for some reason, I, after doing, making this fairly what I consider my most important body of work of the collages that you described, that was a fashion in which I worked for about 10 years, more or less. And then I did this project in Spain that I felt that summarized that form of working and that encapsulated it into an experience that that made me feel like something was complete. Since then, I had been just being taken by very simple scenes around home, light on walls and a bee dying, for example. And I just started recording these moments, and that's what that show ended up being. Like, it was just called Home, and it was very touching moments of my everyday life, just kind of moments that touched the whole drama of life, you know, the tragedy of a small death like an ant or a bee, and the joys of an amazing event, you know, that is mainly made of light and paint in a wall, or my cat looking at me, or so home to me. It's a notion that I feel that I have been taken or guided by life to explore as an internal space, as some set of conditions that can be invited or can be unrecognized. And the more we invite them, and the more we recognize that home can be anywhere in a way, and that we can make home by making peace with ourselves or by learning about ourselves or going in silence for a little bit, then what is not home starts being more foreign in a way. It's like a way of coming to our own rescue. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. And just to provide a little more context for the callers, you know, Herman, your artwork takes so many different dimensions, and you know, I think photography people are very comfortable with, you know, your photography. But if you go to visit your website, there are, you know, beautiful installations that you have done over the years, and one that you just alluded to, which one in Spain, was an installation that you actually did in the nave of a church. Called Silence as Departure. And what I loved about your approach to, you know, to, I mean, just the sense of being in the space of a church and being able to create and not know exactly what the end result was going to be, but in your process realizing, wow, what I'm creating is really akin to what it feels like to be in sitting meditation. And you know, I wasn't in Spain to experience that in person, but I could sense that so deeply through the images and the sounds that you shared of documenting the project. And it was extraordinary, and it's stayed with me ever since, because it is so hard to find words to share what it, you know, of being in that kind of internal space. It's, but even in your photography, I feel like in what you share visually, opens up the invisible. And that is a very special place to be, you know, that you can kind of walk in both those realms so easily and invite others in your, through your artwork to also inhabit that those realms.
Mm. You know, there's something to be said about the connection between that, what you're mentioning right now, that walking between the two, it took a while to somehow access. I have to mention a little bit about my story. And by the way, these are not meant to be like my ideas, but more like ideas. And what I'm sharing is really my journey and how these ideas have become true for me. Many others have stopped, you know, feeling it or ringing as true, but these have, and that's what I'm here to share, I guess. When I came to this country as a result of meeting my wife in India, actually, in 1992, I was quite lost. I didn't know where to stand, where I stood. You know, I had been doing commercial photography for a while, and finding that milieu completely foreign to me, and so I left Mexico, and as I met my wife, we came to this country, and for a good couple of years, I had to figure out who I was and what I was doing here, other than being in love, and in the process, I was very insecure about what I had to offer in this society of, kids that are coming out of school with incredible skills. And so I just did other stuff. I did what I could do. I did construction, and I laid carpet, and I worked in a print shop. And at the time, without, you know, romanticizing too much this step of my life, but it was very difficult for me to relate to this Ashes work in the way that Joseph Campbell talks about it. Like I realized with time that I had to go back to do that kind of work because my upbringing had been pretty sheltered, and there was something in me that had to go back there, you know, and experience life more as it in a more metaphysical way in its hardship. And so over the years, you know, move another 10 years forward, my need for somehow working therapeutically these components of my psyche, you know, these my psychology background, my father, my mother, my siblings, actually, you know, all of them in some way, you know, are related to psychology. But I was used to working with this material, and I hadn't had a chance to explore it here in the States. So finally, around probably 1998, I was able to afford being able to see a therapist and exploring these fairly dark spaces. Here, the concept of the shadow as being a very important part of creativity, you know, really, really started taking relevance. But at the time, it was just something that felt very difficult and that kept me in a very dark, frustrated, sad place that I thought was not going to end ever. And interestingly enough, by the year 2000, more or less, I found myself buying a digital camera and starting to play with images that we're dealing mostly with this space of darkness. I started just started accepting what I wanted to photograph and photographing it, and then playing with it like a kid would play with dough or something, just putting two images together and see what came up. So in a way, this was an important coming home again. This theme of home seems to string it all. Accepting that space was a really dark and difficult one was a very important part of me, probably kind of touching bottom and coming out you know, for her was the next thing that took place. And it's a process that really hasn't ended, but that really helped me, touching bottom in that moment. You know, this John Malloy said that our force, our strength comes from this darkness, from this shadow material. And unless we explore that shadow material, our strength is not there. And that's why the fact that many art schools these days do not explore the psychological component of art making as an intrinsical part of the process produces artists that, you know, young people that are trying to find an identity and that create art that looks like art. It doesn't relate directly to themselves in a experiential way, but it just becomes what a young artist would do, you know, something that is different, that is upside down, that is this idea reworked. So, you know, that's what comes to mind about sharing right now.
Well, and I mean, that is such a beautiful example of surrender, and it isn't easy to surrender. I think in our lives we go through layers and layers and layers of surrendering, but having the courage, and it takes so much courage to touch those deep places that can be, you know, feeling like touching terror. I mean, it's really hard, but when you can, I think without touching them, I don't think we realize how held we are, and then the light comes through, and that's what I see in your imagery, is that there's this, the light shines through the cracks, you know, and that's the beauty of the human experience, that richness. And when I think back even in my own childhood, I don't think I really felt home here. I know I didn't feel home here, and there was a lot of sadness. And I remember just thinking as a child, you know, gosh, why are people kind? Like, what is this, you know? And realizing that my refuge was nature, was the garden. And just being able to, I didn't even think of it till now, but, you know, I think there are times in our lives where we just have patience and we wait for those opportunities where we can kind of, you know, explore that deeper and have the courage to go deeper and deeper. And that's when we, you know, we come home, you know, they're different experiences. But one thing I wanted to share that really moved me, Herman, was you wrote about being an artist, and you said, I consider myself a migrant, a very fortunate one at that. My main reason for migrating was love. And in a way, we can all be seen as migrants, moving from the unknown into the known, from the need to control to the notion of surrender. And I think we all can resonate from that sense. But what touched me so much was, you know, your search is held in this space of love. I don't know if you would like to share a little bit more about that, but that really moved me.
I feel that I've been very, very lucky in my life. And once Steve Jobs said that it was very hard to see where we're going from the standpoint of the present, but on hindsight, you can see how every one of the dots that you touched in throughout your life, you know, why you were interested in this or that, or why you went to this place and what you got from that, like, you can see clearly the guided path, the guided journey that you embarked on without really realizing it. And what he said actually on that commencement speech, it was really beautiful. Was just like, trust that, you know, he was talking to Stanford students in 85, I think, and he was just inviting them to trust that voice that takes you wherever, even if it doesn't make any sense, just, you know, allow that to be. And so I guess I was lucky enough to search, you know, to trust that voice, and I never, when I went to India in 92, I never thought that I was not going to come back to Mexico, what I considered my home and land at that point. And really meeting Diana and what has formed around this relationship since then has been a very important anchor in my experience of life, and couldn't have happened without her or with that experience itself. And I guess I feel definitely that living in relationship makes you not be the center of the universe. Suddenly, more than you is the center of your small universe, to call it something. And so you stop moving like a unit, and your ego is not the most important part. Is to me, is one of the strongest lessons, you know, towards this identifying with the little voice, you know, the little you that is prone to throwing a tantrum when something doesn't go your way. But separation is not a possibility. So you have to stay in relationship. And to me, that's one level of, to me, that's how I experience love. And then the rest has been, I guess, coming to love myself, like feeling more compassion with the one that was having a really hard time adapting to a foreign country, you know, and I continue to explore that through service space. Particularly, I feel that empathy towards myself or towards others, I want to say, is something that will expand and become more as I feel empathy towards others. That's definitely one of my personal journeys, you know, how to feel more about other people and what they're doing and being more compassionate in general. You know, I feel that I used to be a very hard little boy, you know, like a hardened boy, and I can see that aspect of myself still today. Sometimes I'm harsh, I'm harsh with myself, and that manifests, you know, in my way of relating to other people outside. So that's a part of my learning, but it's really, ultimately, it's really about love and about then when the artwork showed up, you know, I just started falling in love with these pieces that were puzzles to me because they were not clear to me. Many of them, up to today, I can't really tell you in words what they're about. But I know that when I finished them, when I ended up collaging and manicuring these images to what they wanted to be themselves, I knew that they were finished. And when I looked at them, I went like, God, this is really me, but it's a very strange me, you know, with these elements. What are these elements? What is this, you know, Renaissance-like hand, you know, that I may have borrowed from a painting? Or why is it there? You know, why is that meaningful to me? And I guess it's these questions, you know, that Rilke invites you to explore, you know, just that, learning to live with those questions and at the same time loving them, you know, just loving mm-hmm. that process of self-cognition. And to do that in company of somebody that is willing to support you, you know, is all I know. That's it.
Yeah, well, I've been really struck by your relationship with Nayana and how you hold each other so beautifully and how, you know, it's quite amazing in marriages where, you know, you see two souls come together and very different journeys, but here you are together and having a life together. And I think of that a lot even within my own family with a husband and two children. It's here we are together on this journey. And, and you know, I've been married now 21 years, and it's amazing to think, you know, when I think back, the struggles were the gifts because it's like that kind of scrubbing, you know, whether you got the ego or what you want, what I'm attached to, like was just letting go. And, you know, to have that staying power to be able to see and come through it is so beautiful. And, you know, I was kind of in awe, like, wow, you know, look where we are now. And, you know, going kind of in and out of these different phases. But to be in relationship and to trust that, I think, is quite an extraordinary experience. But, you know, and just thinking about in relationship, your relationship with life, with others, and I think something that I wanted to share with you or explore with you, excuse me, is around this idea of wilderness, where, you know, kind of like, where is that place as human beings where we kind of, you know, we've kind of I think separated ourselves from nature, and we're kind of, you know, finding our way back home, so to speak. And Herman, you know, in this beautiful exchange around the deer, you share with me that you actually live in a home that is, you know, very close to nature, and you feel very blessed to have that wilderness outside your door. And I wonder, you know, kind of in a metaphorical sense, you know, what does that wilderness mean to you, or how you, when you kind of, when you think about, you know, I don't know how to articulate this, but kind of in your mind, in your heart, you know, what is wilderness? What is the essence of wilderness? You know, what is that? How does that speak to you?
You know, I don't know, but I do, actually. Wilderness, to me, the possibility of having contact, and as I'm saying this, that deer is showing up on my window right now, okay? that deer that was there yesterday and that was here this morning, he's just walking by. So to me, this is very magical, which is just happening right now. Because to me, wilderness in this case is that deer, and the meaning that came from that Animal Speak book that you shared with me, right now is listening to myself, is listening to the guiding voice and the voice that I have probably not paid attention, or I should take that back, the voice that that has been guiding me without me giving it fully full credit for that. As I was doing that, I felt that I was stumbling, and only to come to realize that I was just following that all along. And wilderness, somehow, I've always wanted to know more about wilderness. To me, wilderness is the unknown. That I grew up in Mexico City, you know, in the middle of one of the biggest cities in the world, and we had trees in our house, the street where I grew up. But the idea of wilderness as something that would not be threatening, something that would be completely accommodating and embrace you in safety, the idea of wilderness not being the threat that we have always come to believe that it is, you know, I think that that's my next step, coming to terms with the fact that there's no enemy, that there's nothing to fear out there, as long as you are in connection with your internal voice, with yourself, and you are, I guess, you know, in connection with God. I think I've shied away from using that word in my life because I was brought up as Catholic, but had the good fortune of having a pair of parents that were seekers, and that my father guided my mother to a Sufi practice that lasted for the last almost probably 18 years of his life, and that's still present in my mother's life. I know that. So that allowed me to just explore other stuff that I will be always grateful for their example in terms of going there to the unknown, to what is non-conforming to what has been, to, you know, maybe leaving behind entire groups of people that you have no longer something to exchange with, you know, and stepping into the wilderness.
What also arises for me too is that opportunity that the deer is presenting is, you know, kind of an invitation to kind of step into our primal knowing. You know, like we, you know, that the wisdom is within us, but we forget. We maybe don't know how to tap into it. Silence is one vehicle to tap into it. Different practices, but I think being in nature, when you can really slow down and, you know, the deers appear, you know, like it's interesting what animal, like if you just sat for an hour at the base of a tree or just anywhere in nature, just for an hour, just quietly, you know, it's amazing what animals come to you in that space. And you know, and I feel like that is, you know, an opportunity to, you know, to connect to that, those deeper aspects of ourselves. These animals are, you know, are sharing with us if we can be in relationship with them. We are willing to be, you know, what does that mean? What does that look like? You know, or the tree, sitting at the base of a tree and being able to just really, you know, feel the roots and feel the ancient wisdom and just let go. And not you know, just let go and see what arises.
You know, and possibly even bringing it back around to relationship, and if we can then take that reverence that we have for the tree and bring it back to your coworkers, like we're always in relationship. I'm in relationship here with my wife or my cat, my beloved little cat. But when I go out into the street, you know, it's not different. The problem is that all these conditionings come in where we get completely blinded by what has been and what we have been learning throughout our whole life. You know, this need for belonging, for feeling safe, and when somebody comes to you with a feeling, saying something that doesn't feel so good, there's also an offering in that experience where you can change that. You have the potential, the capability of shifting that around instead of running with the emotion of feeling, offended or stepped on. And eventually those, when you see things like that, when you manage to somehow see that tree or that deer, you know, can have all different kinds of different forms that are human. I don't know which percentage of the time, you know, it's not very different. It's just difficult because with humans, we go into our programmings and it's really hard to not let them take over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and just bringing back John Molloy's wisdom, he always, when he works with the children, you know, he will look at each individual in the circle and really honor, like, you are original medicine, you know, each one of you. And to think that not one of us has the same eyes. We all have unique eyes. We all are unique. We all have our own medicine. And the idea of, you know, when we are, you know, approached in the street and we have there's this opportunity for, you know, there may be feeling this negativity or something that's very uncomfortable, to kind of embrace that and be like, what is the medicine for me in this situation? I try to think about that a lot, actually, when I'm really uncomfortable. It's like, okay, why am I so uncomfortable? And it is, it's an opportunity. And it makes me realize, you know, how as a parent, I can hold that space for my children, and how we as stepping into a generation, you know, of becoming elders, of how we can really support our children and offer them the tools so they don't, you know, so they will feel that safety, feel that ability. You know, I feel like that this is a beautiful opportunity for us to share these gifts, these learnings, because as we talked the other day, Herman, you know, it's when, you know, before we get to kindergarten, you know, you are so connected to everything around you. There's no separation. And then we start school and, you know, we start to come into, you know, our ethereal bodies. All these changes happen and we kind of start to forget. We disconnect more as we get older. And it's like, how, you know, are there ways, whether it's an art practice or meditation or silence, whatever it is, to really encourage our children to have that quiet or that slowing down time so they can handle the complexities of life, because it is getting more and more complex.
Yeah, and I think that you're touching on a very important point there, because I can't remember who said that quote, to be yourself in a world that day and night relentlessly wants you to be somebody else is one of the hardest things that there's ever, that the biggest undertakings that we could ever, accomplish. And unconsciously, there's one part of me that is really longing for that internal peace where you can be honest with yourself and accept yourself the way you are. And just this idea of all the normative mechanisms, you know, that condition our feeling that we belong to society, that we belong to a group, to a religious group, to in school, you know, how can you be part of the group of the boys that instead of being an outsider, which I always felt like an outsider pretty much everywhere where I went, felt that I was too kind of like girly and I don't know, sensitive or whatever. So I think that kids that are growing older, you know, we chose not to have kids. So that experience is something that I have yet to live in another lifetime. But I can see now that my offering to somebody younger than me would be to try to just hold space, as, again, John Malloy seems to be all over the place, you know, hold space for them to do whatever they have to do, you know, and them knowing that you're right there behind them no matter what. I think that's a beautiful notion.
Yeah, and that's love. And while we're waiting for questions, I just wanted to, Herman, just ask you, you know, who is inspiring you at this time? Or what is inspiring you at this time?
You know, I really am inspired by a lot of what goes on in the service space community. Or that I learn about, you know, through the service space community. There's so many people in the world that are doing amazing, amazing work that are hearing this call, you know, to seeing our kin, you know, with a different optical, a different light than we're being sold by the media. The revolution will not be televised. That keeps coming up for me, but I feel that there's a tsunami that is taking place with groups like Service Space and so many others in the world that are doing things for the earth, for each other, to help us see each other in a more loving light. Every time that I see an act of kindness in the street, you know, I'm now more bound to see them, because I realized not only the need for that, but I realized that just to hold that in my mind has an effect on the world outside. Sorry that I'm making like a segue in this direction, but I there was something that I wanted to say, and is that physics, more than chemistry or biology, as a science, has been able to accommodate a little bit much more like a new way of seeing the world. Scientists like David Bohm or Carl Pivram or Michael Talbot, I mean, there's so many of them that have, I consider, visionaries that are allowing us to see the model of reality under a different light and helping us realize that our thoughts do have an effect on everything around us, and that the power of thought is just, we are divine beings. The thing is that we just, to get there, it's, of course, you know, the biggest question ever. So when it comes to feeling negative, and, you know, we have to somehow realize that if we were to take responsibility for every one of our thoughts and how we interact with the world and what we're offering, what we walk out into the world offering with our stance, with our smile or no smile, you know, with our, sheltered or armored attitude or complete lack of it, is changing the world. You know, that I feel that to be reminded of that is the greatest gift for me right now, because we always have a choice. You want to have a great day? I think you can have a great day. You can also have a horrible day. And the key is to realize that it's somehow in your hands or your mind to get closer to this possibility.
Very much so.
Anne,
yes.
We do have a couple of questions. I could bring in those questions at 10 or...
bring them. Yes, please. I think it would be lovely to invite questions.
Okay. Herman, you have a fan that's been emailing us questions, Paco from Mexico. And mm-hmm. He says, casting light into shadow creates, I'm sorry if I mispronounce this, but casting light into shadow creates a chiaroscuro? Mix of known and unknown. Oh, what a beautiful word. Mix of known and unknown. The result is wild Baroque, as your work has surely shown. How much is premeditated? How much is surprise in your final result?
Wow. Well, I have to share that Paco is my dear cousin, and I appreciate very much the question, Paco. And you got it right. You're a poet, and you know that looking into the light, looking into the darkness, you know, just as a result brings you into the light. But that exploration is priceless, and the reward is incredible, because it's like your nature gets revealed by the exploration that you take into the everything that you are, and they're both sides of the same token, you know, the opposites touch. So I hope I'm answering your question, but to me it has been priceless. I think that my life would never have been the same without this experience. I'm not talking, I don't want to talk about the body of work, because that is going to disappear and you know, like in thin air, that probably won't last. But what is really lasting for me is the transformation that it enabled me to take as a result of that exploration. And it, almost the artwork is a byproduct of the need to communicate or to share that journey.
Wow.
That's how I see it.
Thank you. We have a couple of other questions in the queue, and before I go to them, I wanted to share gratitude from Lina Martinez from Oaxaca, Mexico. And she says, thank you for your invitation, for being true to ourselves and the practice of service and generosity for our earth and fellow human beings. And I will...
Well,
go on. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Oh, that's my mother, by the way.
Oh.
So, thank you, Mommy. It's very much appreciated, and you were a big part of that.
So beautiful. I'm going to go to Bolivie.
Hello. Good morning. This is Pallavi calling from Bhutti. First of all, I'd like to thank Anne. Anne, this is just beautiful. All the things that you've been bringing up, touch me really deeply. And Herman, I'd like to also thank you for who you are and what I can feel. I can feel you on the call. And so first, I want to just deeply thank you for that. Everything you're saying is just so exquisite. I have a lot of questions. I might jump back again at the end of the line. The one thing that's coming up for me right now is, you're floating, is what I'm feeling. You're floating between the space of the known and the unknown. And I'm just so ecstatic that you're speaking about the connection to the shadow. And so my question is, as an artist, as a creator, as a human being, as you're in the space of known and unknown, do you still have desires?
Well, yes, definitely.
Yes.
But I have to say that the desire, the nature of desire now has taken a very different tone for me, because I am not looking for another show. In fact, I haven't really been photographing all that much. I think that the last time I stopped producing anything that looked like art, it took about 10 years to come back to it. So I guess not identifying so much with the one that I have been is very important for me. My desires are changing, but they're shifting into a desire for being more of service, of giving back, of sharing who I am through art or else. But really, it's not desire like I used to, where I desired to sell a lot of my work to be able to feel rich or this and that. But it's coming from a place of a much deeper desire, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Desire of just becoming, I guess. That's desire of becoming.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Pallavi, thank you for your beautiful words.
Herman, I feel like there's many heart bursting in this of callers that are part of this conversation or people listening to the live stream. My heart definitely feels stunned into silence right now. Thank you. And we have another caller in the queue, so I will go to that person.
Is this my turn? I'm Anne from California. I'm an artist, and I am so inspired by what I have been feeling and hearing. And part of it was in preparation for this call, which I realized yesterday that I would like to be part of this, and so I planned for it. And I went to bed last night at 6 o'clock, and just allowing myself that private time and that private space, I feel so renewed. And then to be part of this conversation, and to hear what I hear and feel what I heard this morning, or I'm hearing this morning, is just so affirming, and I'm just so grateful to have been able to hear this and to be part of this. Thank you so much.
That really, your call touches me, Anne. Thank you so much for calling and expressing that.
Thank you for bringing your presence into the space, Anne. And the other Anne, sorry, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to also share gratitude, because this, what is raised in this conversation is such a co-created space. So even though, you know, callers are, you know, in their homes all over the world, I feel like that is holding. We are all so, you know, whatever comes up because of all of our presences. And I feel like that is such a beautiful space to enter into. And I'm so grateful for the Awaken Calls for that opportunity.
Thank you. And speaking of, just a reminder, if you're part of this conversation on the phone or online and would like to share a question or a reflection, please press *6 so that you can get into the queue, or you can send it in to ask@servicespace.org. And we have a question from our very own Kozo, who is on the call, but his cell phone is a bit shaky right now, and so he asked me to vocalize. Is that the right word? Question for him. But he would like me to also, Herman, just he would like to express his gratitude for being a role model for him. And his question is, you mentioned that you always were on the outside of being a boy. You also mentioned John Malloy a number of times. Can you talk about gender and love? What does it mean to be a loving, compassionate man? Who were your role models to become this loving, compassionate man?
Thank you, Kozo. Thank you for bringing that up, because I think it's a very important aspect of my journey. I have to say that there's a man, Bill Say, somebody that I work with, when I the therapist that allowed me and helped me to work through the issues that I mentioned earlier, and that later on I was able to do like a 2-year training with him. So I got to you know, work all together with Bill Pradley for around 5 years, and I feel that he is somebody that didn't have any issues going into the center of the whirlwind and be consumed by big questions and showing you that he was really having not the easiest time, but he didn't have any qualms showing it. And to me, that that is very, very valuable. He taught me that I could ask for help coming from a space of power, that I didn't have to be, I didn't have to feel devastated to ask for help, but that I could do that from a space of dignity and self-love and surrender to. So Bill Say comes to mind. I mean, there's many, many people. Sometimes when I get asked, you know, who inspires me, and like I realize that there's so much out there, so many people that are out there that inspire me, that I feel that I should name them all. But Bill Say comes to mind because he really touched my heart, and he was like a really clear example for me of what that looked like. And I feel that in turn I can offer that to others, even though when I haven't had that many opportunities, I feel. But he made it possible for me to pass that on, and I hope that answers your question, Kozo.
Thank you, Herman. I also I would also like to ask a question, which is a larger question. Herman, I was reading your bio on the Awaken Call page, and it talks about the spiritual journey that you experience in Pune in India. And I was hoping that you could share a little bit about that, what brought you to Pune, and what were some of your experiences there that created a shift for you?
Well, when my life started completely dissolving in Mexico City, I realized that I needed to, you know, go someplace else, and At the time, I had a very dear friend of mine that had taken on the he had been in the Osho Rajneesh ashram for many years. He left Mexico way early, you know, a wonderful pilgrim. That's how I can describe Rupesh. And we grew up together. We made music together. He was an incredible human being, and he had been in Pune for a long time. So I just thought, I'm going to go find my friend, you know, that was such an example for me. He left Mexico. He didn't have any issues, you know, leaving all our friends that we grew up with. And so I went following his example in a way. I just went like, I want what you got, you know? And so when I got there, as life can do it, you know, one after another, my lessons, you know, like paraded, and it was not an easy experience for me. But eventually, after probably around about 3 months into it, that's not true. I gotta mention this story real quickly because I saw this woman that I just felt completely attracted to, and I went up to her and I told her that, and and she walked away happy that I had done that. Oh, thank you, you know. And then the next day she taps me on the shoulder and she asked me, "Are you Germán?" And I went like, "Yes, but how do you know my name?" And she said, "Well, Rupesh told me that you're in town, and if you remember, you and me met in Mexico City 10 years ago."
Wow.
And it dawned on me that she was the ex-wife of somebody that I actually grew up with, again, as well, that knew my friend Rupesh and that had come to Mexico City to visit with my friend, her husband. And and I remember that it was very hard for me to, I felt the same thing that I felt in Pune, I felt 10 years before. So it was amazing for me to realize that she was in the same place in Pune. And lo and behold, move forward about 4 months, you know, we are in a relationship in Goa, where we spent almost 2 months together, and then we came here to this country, and it's been 23 years now that we've been together. So that's the largest part of what happened to me in Pune. But obviously, the whole setting of learning about meditation and just being in touch with all this knowledge that that the ashram had to offer, it is an amazing place. But it changed my life. It changed my life with all these other possibilities that were not possibilities for me when I was in Mexico City. Coming in touch with the Indian culture that now through Service Space I continue to be fed by and nourished, and I'm sure that I was Indian in a previous lifetime probably or two, but I don't know if that answers your question. That's the long elevator answer.
No, thank you for sharing a little bit about your journey while there. It's hard for me to form some of these into questions because they're much bigger, I think, topics. But, you know, earlier in the conversation, you said physics more than chemistry or biology has been able to accommodate a new way of seeing the world. And it's allowed you to see reality in a different light and realize the power of thought. Can you expand on that more? And as part of that, maybe share some of your own journey of how you've worked towards cultivating your thoughts in a different way. That makes sense.
Yeah. I guess the idea of mind over matter has always fascinated me, realizing that in a way, we're the model of a computer and software, you know, where we are the hardware and the software is our beliefs and our emotional patterns, particularly related to survival and belonging. I think that made me want to snap out of these or try to just look at them first. You know, why am I feeling this? You made that question earlier. You know, why am I feeling this? You know, what is this reminding me of? And if we ask that enough, because they are frequently spaces that don't make much sense. You know, why do I react to my wife or to a question that doesn't warrant that emotional response? And so investigating that was always kind of interesting for me. I mean, not always, but it started becoming, as I learned more about the process, I went like, I have to watch this thing happen, you know, and be aware of what the mind is sending me, because it's not so most of the time. It's just conditionings.
Mm-hmm.
So as I started learning more physics, even when everything that I read about physics normally, you know, just goes over my head so much, but there's something that stays. And the fact that a lot of, or some of these researchers and wonderful scientists have been able to run into what many of them can call God, others can't call it God, but it sounds like what I would call God. And the fact that these people have the courage to come out and talk about this in a world that, you know, Cartesian-y, I mean, after Descartes that has been trying to make everything run through that ringer, that it's impossible. The model is no longer working. And the reason why biology and chemistry have stayed behind, I think, is because there's a lot of created interests out there, you know, in how allopathy, for example, you know, treats people, where it's clear that this more mechanistic way of understanding the body is reductionist at the best. The body is so much more than you know, what the molecules would do under a certain chemical. And the world of chemistry and biology seems to still be in such a old place in comparison to the world of physics that they seem, you know, they seem to keep feeling that it's all about medication. Obviously, you know, there's wonderful aspects to contemporary, you know, allopathic medicine, particularly in a traumatic situation or in the, you know, like being operated on. I completely realize what the place for medicine is today. And frankly, you know, if I may just say one more thing, obviously, there's so many cultures in the world and so many people in the world that benefit from allopathic medicine. I'm not poo-pooing it, but it's time for an expansion of that notion that would be fed more and more by homeopathy, by naturopathy, by Chinese medicine, and trying to weave it all together into a model of healing that would encompass the power of thought and the power of, you know, so that's what comes to mind.
Wow.
I don't know if I could jump in. I wanted to just add, this is a beautiful question, Bela, and what I'm also, Kozo's question keeps arriving back into my heart too, around, you know, when he shared, like, what is it, who are those examples of being loving, compassionate, to be a loving, compassionate male or man? And what I've also experiencing at this time and through the gift of service space is the practice of kindness and the practice of noble friendship, in terms of, you know, really showing up for another being in their journey and the gift of that. And I have found that gender seems to just disappear. And that we're showing up as human beings. And I even see in the kindness circles that we have been holding in the high schools, where when we're in a circle, there is no male, female, gender thing. It's like we're all in this together. And it's so beautiful, because I feel like that's, you know, again, it's kind of how we might think of it in the mind, but truly as a human being, you know, it doesn't matter. And I think through the practice of kindness and generosity, all of that just kind of falls away. And it's quite beautiful. And there are these beautiful souls, you know? It doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
So true, Anne.
I'm still thinking about what you said about the power of noble friendship, and really what it is, and this practice of really showing up for that person and their journey. And it's incredible to have that and have people like you, Herman, and Kozo and Anne as for me teachers and role models for how to show up as a noble friend. Just wanted to express that sincere gratitude that we do have a couple more questions in the queue. And so I think Balavi has another question. We'll go to her.
I thought I'd ask another question and wanted to jump back in here. And the first thing that's, you know, one thing I just wanted to express is, you know, on this call, even with the caller Anne sharing, she prepared for this call since yesterday, and all the things we are talking about, it seems like if the whole world could be put in a capsule, you know, the moments on this call would be it. I'm feeling the whole world is contained in this space. And the question that has been showing up in Herman, I'm really curious to see what you have to say about it is, you know, in terms of, I want to go towards psychology and creativity. And I still haven't figured out how the self shows up in art that you create. And one thing I've observed over and over again is a lot of artists who do portraits and sculptures, they think they're creating different people, but to any outsider, it is always their own face. And if you point it out to them, they will not accept it. But you will actually see whether it is male, female, an older person, younger person. If I see a sculpture making all these forms, they all have their own face. And I'm wondering how it's connected to the shadow or what you might have to say about that.
Well, I think that what you're alluding to is something that is reflecting the self-referent nature of a lot of art today, but at a very surface level. We are taught, art schools, I think, teach to master a technique to render a result. But, and I don't have much experience with art schools, but my feeling is that the psychological process that to me is the motor of creativity is a very deep undertaking that not too many people are enthused to take or are not encouraged to take, or just because it can feel like a complete whirlwind that won't ever, you know, that you won't survive to. So in a way, my I think that the only thing that I can suggest is, like, befriend your fears, you know, go there, like, get lost in the that thing that is the most horrible thing that you think that, you know, like, if you feel like just writing horrible things about the world, get into it, you know, just, like, do it every morning, do it a lot, and just see what comes out of that, and if you're not done yet, keep doing it. I think that we, there's this prevalent, I mean, this fear of getting lost, like as if who we are was to be lost or possibly get lost in that process. And in a way, this connects with this quote that I seem to quote about myself, about the more individual the search, the more universal it becomes. And the reason for that is if you truly are honest to all of your beliefs, you know, your angers, your what makes you feel sad, what no matter what anybody thinks about that, you know, it's your experience. And if you honor every one of those events that make you feel emotionally in a place that may be of anger or grief or whatever, those are doors. those are doors, but to be able to, for them to really become doors, you have to be willing to get into it, and for a while you may not see the exit. So it's definitely a matter of, I think, of courage, of trusting that the process will take you where you have to go, but you have to go there and just challenge yourself to experience that. I don't know if that helps.
Yes. Thank you.
Mom, I was going to say that I think that is such a beautiful sharing and so very true. I had an experience when I'm not a painter, but I was trying to express something, and so I took out a canvas and started painting. And what I painted really scared me. It really scared me. and it was I remember just kind of hiding it away and thinking, oh my gosh, I can't even look at that. And then every time I was invited to a birthday event with a friend, and we went to do this spontaneous painting in the studio. It was held in a beautiful space of such love. And I started, and it was to paint intuitively. So I painted again. And I painted I kept painting the same exact painting. It just kept coming and coming. But this time, it kind of became a channel, a doorway from one place to another. And it was so beautiful to realize I couldn't have gone through that until I really met my fear. And so I'm really touched by your ability to share that, because it is a beautiful door. And many times we're afraid to walk through them. But when we do, you know, that's where the light comes through.
Another experience I wanted to share is for years, I've been a ceramic artist. I'm not doing it presently, but, you know, it was just whatever I made would just come, and I had no control over it. And I used to like dark raku pottery. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with raku. It's a Japanese technique. It's dark, and they put these bright, you know, iridescent colors you get on it, and it's just beautiful, but a lot of the background is black. And as I worked on clearing my shadow and inner, you know, darkness, one day, a couple of years ago, I got a deep nudge of light, and it was more a sign that my art would change. And so it was an indication that my taste would change, and I think it came about by dissolving the darkness. And now I find myself from just the color black drawn to the color white. And I haven't yet figured out my new taste. So I'm living in this nebulous land of, I don't know what my taste is anymore until I, probably get there. So it's everything that, has been brought up here. I feel the shadow is really so important, and somehow until a few years ago, I was completely blind to it. So I'm really grateful that this is come up in the open for us to think about. Thank you.
If I may share something, I think that this is the shadow keeps seeming to come through, and I've wondered many times, how is it that monks deal with this psychological material, with all this makeup that seems to be. So it's to belong to, it's a human condition, this is really humanity, the story of Milarepa and Ashoka. I mean, there's stories that really validate this model of coming out, from the ashes. But first, you have to get to the ashes. And I believe that the shadow is just such an intrinsic part. Going back to the monks, I'm sure that if you sit and sit and sit and sit for a lifetime, eventually those patterns and all that makeup is going to transform, because that's the power of transformation, the power of meditation. But most of us are not monks, and that mm-hmm. that training is also a very intense training. It's not for everybody. So my question, you know, eventually got answered to me just saying, well, you know, probably the only way of transforming this is by just really diving into it. And but it was a lot easier said than done, and I'm still working through it. There's no way that probably I'll ever, you know, be done. But by now, it's in the light, and by now, it's like I can look at a lot of my pieces. If you guys look at what I've done in those 10 years, you know, there's a lot of darkness there, and you know what? I'm very proud of it. It's incredible. Paco, my cousin that called earlier, he has amazing poetry. It's full of darkness, and I admire people that have the courage, you know, to dive into that, because that's where the light lives. That's where the light lives. Mm.
Yep.
Balavi, thank you for bringing this beautiful question and dialogue, feeding that. Edmond, I know we've approached 10:30, and is it okay if we ask you just one more question?
Of course, I have all the time in the world. No rush.
Well, we wanted to ask you how we can support your journey, the larger service-based community. How can we serve your journey?
Well, I'm going to quote Jacob Needleman. His answer was really good, and it's just by doing what you do, by being part of service space, by touching people's lives the way you guys do it, the way we do it. I'm including myself in there because I really feel that I belong there. I think it's an amazing effort that continues, an amazing model to Nipun, Dhru. I mean, it's incredible what has formed around this. And the only thing that I can think of is just like keep doing what you're doing. You know, it's beautiful.
Mm.
Beautiful.
Wow. I'm inspired to keep doing what I'm doing just by having this hour and a half in conversation with you, Herman. I think that for many of us in the world, it is quite difficult and challenging to befriend our fears. And as Anne, as you shared, when you're able to just go through one of those doors, the lightness that can shine through, even if it may take a while, it really helps to reveal, you know, what your purpose is, and not in connection to everybody else, and in connection to helping to co-create a more compassionate world. And just wanted to express my gratitude, Herman, and also gratitude on behalf of Service Space and just the larger community for not only sharing your time, but sharing your presence in so many subtle ways in this conversation. It's a very palpable presence that I can feel through the phone. And so deep gratitude to you. And I also wanted to give everybody a chance to say thank you to you and wish you a happy birthday, a belated happy birthday. And at the count of three, we can wish you a happy birthday and say thank you. One, two, three. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Love and light.
Thank
love
you.
And
happy
lots of love.
Thank you. Thank you. All so touched. Thank
love
you.
Have a beautiful rest of your day or evening, everyone. Goodbye.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.